I am a POW, and I have a great gratitude to the American Army, and I will explain that later. And the God is our refuge. That was, we had one of our teachers set that to music as our prisoner song. And also it's very appropriate because it had my father's name, Jacob, in there. And it says, God is our refuge and our strength, very present help in trouble. Therefore will we not fear. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And it was set to music. So thank you, and thank you very much for the love offering we just received with my husband. For my husband, as he mentioned, I'm recovering from cancer. I had a tumor behind my eye the size of a golf ball, and that has been taken care of mostly, and I'm in the final stages, but God has just helped us greatly. So thank you for the honor and the privilege to come and share with you all how God preserved me, a missionary child who lived in a mission era of God first and families last. That is not missions today. So how do children fit into their parents' mission work? How do they feel in their nomadic life? Where is home? And there's a similarity with military families in this situation. Today, I would like for you to step back in history. Yes, World War II. Just suppose you are living in China in an area already taken over by the Japanese. One day you hear a knock on your door and you go open the door to find a smartly dressed Japanese soldier telling you that you are now officially a prisoner of war of the Imperial Japanese Army and you have an hour to choose what belongings to take with you to the nice location they will take you to. What would you choose? All the rest of your belongings would be lost to you forever. And how long would you be a prisoner? The unanswerable question. On the other end of the beach, away from the business consulate section, was a China Inland Mission boarding school in Shifu, where I was an 8-year-old who lived in the preparatory school. My sister was 11-year-old who lived in the girls' school, and my 14-year-old brother lived in the boys' school with Libby. We lived in three different locations because of our ages. It was already 3 years since we had seen our dad and 2 years since we'd seen our mother and youngest brother when they had left me at the boarding school, my new home. My older siblings had already been living at the boarding school for 7 years as their full-time home away from home, and they were going home during that time. My parents had made that difficult decision of releasing their full-time guidance into the hands of the staff of the school, but they never dreamt of the terrible future we were all facing. They had buried their first two children in other parts of China, both from illness. The second child had black water fever from malaria, and the family was fleeing for their lives from the communists who were out to kill them. Little 3-year-old Evelyn's last word to our daddy were, "Now, daddy, you rest because you're very tired." Then the death angel came and took their golden-haired girl home to heaven. They were in a fix. If the owners of the inn were to find out that she had died that night in their brand new inn, they would fine my parents very heavily, and their inn would be closed forever. So they carried her out of the inn to their carrier, who soon caught on that she was not talking. Daddy begged the carrier and paid him to carry them to a place where they could bury her. Their daddy and a co-worker dug the grave and buried my little sister in a suitcase in an unmarked grave alongside of others who had been martyred during the Boxer Rebellion, waiting for the resurrection day. Then my parents continued to travel along with hundreds of missionaries who were escaping death to Chifu, where my mother gave birth to her only now living child. Stanley, who later would be living at the Chifu School for 10 years without ever going home. The Japanese gave our missionary staff and missionary family 6 days to pack. How would you like to pack for over 200 students? Pearl Harbor Day hit. December 8th on our calendar, the Japanese marched into our school buildings and said, "Everything is ours, but we will let you borrow them until we find a better place for you," even borrowing the soap dish. So for 11 months, we were prisoners wearing these armbands, which allowed, when we were allowed to leave the compound. This one says that I will promise to obey, because I was a Norwegian citizen. Now, if you were American, you had a big A, and people would turn the A over for victory, and then a B for British, when I was a Norwegian, and that's a Norwegian pin. At the same time that they took over our building and took over everything, they drove in with a motorbike with a seat and stole our headmaster away and took him to a building where they had imprisoned other leading officials in the city who were now being treated badly as spies. Our headmaster had adamantly refused the Japanese request for our teenage girls to become their comfort women. Our headmaster was released after 6 weeks. November 5th, 1942 came when we all were to leave our building. We were allowed the 6 days to walk, and came where all who could walk wound their way across town to Temple Hill. During the walk, all of a sudden, the sound of a gong rang out, and voices sang out, "God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And God is still on the throne, and he will remember our own," showing the weeping crowds and hardened soldiers along the street that we still believed God was in control of our lives. 358 in all from the community were now enemy nationals who were imprisoned in 6 houses, ordinary missionary houses. My sister's house held 100, and my house held 72. And in answer to all who were praying for us all around the world, God even gave us a Christian Japanese commander. So we were treated okay. And they would have roll call, and they taught us to speak in Japanese or count off in Japanese, and they go bango, and we go ichi ni san shi go raka sechi ichi kuju, until we were through being counted. After 11 months in our second imprisonment, we traveled 2.5 days by boat, train, and truck to our future home in Weishan, which greeted us with its formidably high walls, 6 watchtowers, electric barbed wires, Japanese sentries with fixed bayonets, and German shepherd dogs. We walked in weary, tired, and thirsty. And we were greeted with buckets of tea to drink from the prisoners that were there. We were given our prison numbers, which we had to wear all of our waking hours. My number was block 3 and number 33. And, of course, we had roll calls. There had been 2,000 prisoners in an area a little over a city block, 150 yards by 200 yards. 500 able-bodied men and women had been moved, who were replaced with school children and many elderly. The existing prisoners were not happy. But God changed their minds when they found out our high school boys worked very hard. My brother pumped water by the hour. Families lived in 9x12 rooms, and single people lived in former classrooms with complete strangers, with only 18 inches between their beds and the 3 feet on the end. In this little world of 9 feet by 54 inches, to keep all of one's worldly belonging, no storage units. The worst factor being absolutely no privacy. What was the living conditions like? In the prison camp compound, they were filthy. Open cesspools, rats, flies, and bedbugs. and mosquitoes. How did we survive? You learn to make the best of what you have. One of our leaders wrote, Wei Shan, that's the name of the city, the test where a man's happiness depends upon what he has or what he is, on outer circumstances or inner heart. Or on life's experiences, good and bad, or what he makes out of the materials these experiences provide. Flies were so numerous due to the open cesspools. To make fly killing more exciting, contests were held to see who could kill the most. A great-grandson of Hudson Taylor won, having 3,500 flies in his bottle. Even the Japanese wanted the rats killed as they were a danger to our health. My brother and his crew won when they killed 80 with their handmade traps. Their prize was a can of sardines. But bedbugs? Oh my. One schoolmate counted 500 on his bed. Our guards, for the most part, were consular guards. They told us to govern our own camp, and the heads of committees were responsible for the Japanese. We had a real mixture of humanity. Many were very, very rich and had been CEOs of big businesses, so they designated 9 committees and ran them. So we were one of the best-run camps in China. We did not suffer any physical abuse from the Japanese. We were 400 children and many adults of all walks of life. Why were we spared? I do not know specifically why, other than God's people all over the world prayed for us in our camp. Prayer does prevail. We were allowed to have school, unusual. We were allowed to have church and social activities. These were all unusual. As to school, some had to write their own textbooks from memory, as did Eric Little, the gold medal runner in 1924 from Scotland, who refused to run on Sunday but ended up winning a bronze medal for his 200-meter race on Thursday and a gold medal for the 400-meter race on Friday, and setting a new record for the latter. He wrote his own science textbook from memory. He was our camp sports organizer. His family had been sent home to Canada. It was a sad day when he died of a brain tumor at age 43 on February the 21st, 1945, 5 months before the war was over. His favorite verse to preach was, "Forgive your enemies." He said, "When you hate, you are self-centered. When you pray, you are God-centered." Praying changes attitudes. It is hard to hate those you pray for. Several of our schoolmates later went to Japan as missionaries, as they literally forgave their enemies. Our food was a big issue. Hudson Taylor's 80-year-old son lost weight down to 80 pounds. We were slowly starving. We were not getting the vitamins we needed, which ended up with some getting nerve problems, psychological problems, and others with beriberi, not being able to walk. Breakfast was up to us to furnish. We had our own bakery, so bread was used for porridge and soaking it in water and eating it. Middle meal was stew. Best we did not see the meat, if we had it, as no refrigeration, so maggots were scraped off the meat. One time the Japanese left the carcass of a horse out in the camp, but would not let us touch it or use it until it was covered with maggots. They were trying to humiliate us. Evening meal was SOS, same old stew warmed over or thinned out. But we were not to complain. God had provided the food. We were to use our best manners as if we were eating at the King of England's table. Our teachers were very good at making us mind. We were in an English boarding school. Our teacher's biggest concern was the salvation of their students. One little boy could not say the word concentration camp but called it consecration camp. But as the teachers prayed, everything always seemed to get worse. But during the first camp after our school, God marvelously answered prayers, and my brother was one of the ones saved. Now it left me of our family to be saved. One day in our last camp, when I was 11 years old, one of our teachers, a Canadian, talked to each one of us, our class, which was the last class of the school that entered there before the war broke out. Then I accepted the Lord. I knew I was a sinner, and I had put it off, and she helped me make the decision right then. So our three family members now were all saved. I do not believe I wrote my parents, as our letters were all the same that our class wrote our parents, so we did not put individual news in there. Our teachers dictated them so they'd be safe to read by the Japanese. We were allowed 100 words, including the addresses, and we wrote once a month. The receiver had to write on the back of the letter to be received back, and most of them were never sent. Too much work for the Japanese to censor them, as they had at least 16 different languages and more nationalities among the prisoners. Our parents had no way of really knowing what was happening to us. Morale had really slumped in the camp. Most of the Red Cross packages meant to nourish us were stolen by the Japanese. There would have been many, many deaths from starvation if we were had to live another year in that condition. People who were around the soldiers saw that the war must be going against them, as they would put their hands up to their throats as if they were going to kill themselves. We had no news. With all the prayers for the liberation and the despair at the same time, we were still bound up in a daily maintenance routine when on August the 17th, 1945, some heard the sound of a different airplane. People became excited, and those who were out and about wildly waving their shirts, etc., to get the attention of the airplane, as they actually saw the American flag on it. But it flew away, and we all sank. We were having a music lesson, and we got excited and wanted to get out, and of course our teacher did too, so we were allowed out of the music lesson. And then the plane came back and started circling and coming down lower and lower to 450 feet. And as we watched the plane, which was called the Armored Angel, come lower and lower, the B-24 opened up, and seven beautiful handkerchiefs, what it looked like to us, as we'd never seen parachutes before, it looked like they came floating out, and we all went wild and rushed for the gate. And the Japanese soldiers let us go by them, and we headed out to the enormous outside for the first time in 2 years. Freedom to breathe the fresh air outside the putrid camp, to see all the greenery. But our bare feet could not take all the prickles. Our bare feet had worn down the paths in the camp over the last 2.5 years. Our shoes had to be saved for the winter with the toes cut out. The soldiers were seven brave men who had volunteered for the mission, and their mission was called the Duck Mission, being willing to die if necessary to come and deliver us. China had 1 million Japanese soldiers there who had never lost a battle, and that's what they were facing. The peace treaty had not been signed, and it was not known what orders had been given the Japanese soldiers, if any, as to what to do. The commander-in-chief of the whole Japanese army had ordered that at the time the first non-Japanese military foot landed on Japanese soil, all their prisoners throughout the Far East, including civilians, should immediately be killed. And Allied soldier prisoners had already been digging their own graves in their prisons camps for the preparation of their deaths. However, the two atom bombs were dropped before there was any invasion of Japanese land. The bombs caused terrible suffering, but it meant that Japan surrendered, and our lives were spared. because of that, from their planned slaughter. But our lives were still in very much danger, as there were different groups, three of them, who wanted to take over the camp and use us as hostages. We were 1,500 people, and we would have made good hostages. One of the seven heroes was a missionary kid who had gone to our schools and was given the privilege to leave his FBI post to personally help free us, because he had lived in China, and so he was deemed helpful to be necessary. God is such a personal God to arrange something like that. And his first question was, where is Paul Bruce, the headmaster, the one who had been imprisoned as a spy, so-called spy? There was another one was an American Japanese who was to serve as an interpreter. My husband and I personally visited him in Nebraska and witnessed to him. And a Chinese student who dropped out of university at age 20 to help the Americans as a Chinese interpreter. He is the only one alive today and is in his late 90s in a Chinese nursing home. And we know where he's at because after an absence of 70 years, his grandson came to the United States and is living in Lexington, South Carolina. And he found our website and he connected and said, I think you're the one, I am the one you're looking for. And so we got connected to his grandfather. And we have been in his home, we've witnessed to him, and we are in contact with him all the time. They are not Christians, they're Buddhists and Taoists, but they are around Christian people. And she's just undergone a double mastectomy and needs a lot of prayers. Just a really sweet couple, but God brought them here to the States. And so we are in contact, and I was able to write Eddie and say, thank you for your deliverance. Because of that, we are a large family today. I'm alive and I'm well. And it's just a huge answer to prayer. The major entered the commander's office telling him that they were a humanitarian mission to help the prisoners get to their home. The commander promised to help. But the very next day, the very sick people had to leave, be flown out, and an American plane came to pick them up. But they could not land because there was 200 Japanese soldiers around the airfield, and the plane had to leave. And so the commander was the major was very angry. He said, you promised this is not going to happen again. And it didn't. But that was a miracle the day before, because we people as a mass were the ones that helped the deliverers get in without any casualties. We were in the first group of 500 to leave the camp. Then the communists blew up the railroad tracks, and all the rest of the prisoners had to be flown out. Camp was not empty until October. Now we were on our way home to Norway. Instead of going to home to Daddy at the mission station, my parents had been in China for 30 years. My parents had had a very difficult time all these years. Norway had been occupied by the Germans, which meant they couldn't cash any check for Norway. They were orphan missionaries. But God, he wonderfully supplied all their needs through different avenues, and he even took care of their three oldest children through the Japanese, who were responsible for our housing and our food. What about clothes? No problem. Just keep wearing the old clothes. No place to buy new clothes or shoes. We were heading for Norway via England with many of our Chifu family. When the ship stopped at Ceylon, Sri Lanka today, a voice came over the loudspeaker calling the three Nordmals to the captain's office, telling us that we were getting off the ship by ourselves and heading for Calcutta, India, as our mother and brother were there waiting for us. What a shock. We didn't know that. We had lacked all that communications. So down the road we went into a little boat taking us to the shore in a foreign country to a place like a motel. And what a shock to us, because it's like our umbilical cord was being cut off from our home, our people that we had been with for all those years. We arrived after three days, we were put on an American soldier's plane along with the soldiers. We arrived in Calcutta eagerly, but there was no mother and no brother there to meet us. What were we going to do? A soldier said, "Well, you can ride the bus with us into the city that was so dangerous due to India trying to get their freedom from England." We said, "We don't have an address." But what else to do but ride with them? And they deposited us at the sophisticated Grand Hotel. We stood outside the hotel with our pathetic belongings. Taxis came up offering us a ride. We told them we don't have an address, nor do we have any money. Had God brought us that far and forgotten us? Finally, a soldier said, "Why don't you go inside the hotel to an office, and maybe the gentleman there can help you?" And would you believe it, in that huge cosmopolitan city, this one man among the immense population knew our mother, and knew she was at the Viceroy's house, which was being used for ex-prisoners of war to help to find, to help them find their way home. When we arrived at the regal Viceroy's house, my mother was told, "Your children are here." She looked up at my brother, mistaking him for a soldier because he was dressed in khakis. He was now 18 years old, and she had not seen him since he was 12. Then she looked at her girls and recognized the dresses that they had on, we had on, which she had sewn for us 5 years before. And you can imagine what they looked like. What a grand reunion, a foretaste of heaven, when we will be reunited with our loved ones. Our daddy joined us a year later in Norway for Christmas in 1946. We were together as a family for the first time in 7 years. He has spent his last 12 years in China without a furlough. My parents had been separated for 2 years. Now our family was together for 6 whole weeks. And then my brother left on a ship for college in the States. He had sat for his Oxford exams in camp and had to wait a year until after liberation for his papers to be taken by hand to Oxford, England, by our headmaster, and then he received his certification that he had passed. And he was delighted, of course. He became a pathologist. In Norway, we did have a home, but it belonged to the mission. So it seemed like we always had a stream of people visiting their long-lost missionaries. So there was not much privacy. And when my dad arrived in Norway, instead of getting a long-deserved rest, he and my mother traveled constantly for the missions, so our family was split up again, in a sense. But were we now to have our own home again after we arrived in America in 1948 and 49? Not so. God's call came first before the family. So where did we belong? Who now was going to be our substitute parents? Where was home? So consequently, we were somewhat farmed out to relatives. So our family that was a continuation of the nomadic missionary life. I am a third cultural kid, having lived in 3 different countries at that time. My siblings were classified as white Chinese by birth with Norwegian citizenship and had entered America as a student for my older brother and 2 as visitors for my 2 younger ones. Every year they had to register at the post office to make sure they were accounted for by the American government. If they didn't register, they would be deported. That was until they were allowed to become citizens. I had been born on furlough in America at my mother's home. So at age 15, I became an American citizen due to my birth certificate. But once we arrived once we were out of high school, we were totally on our own. I met my husband at church. We were married 8 years and had 4 children before my husband met his in-laws when they came home from ministering in Indonesia for 10 to 11 years. Then it was too late for them to say no. During that time, we didn't see them, didn't talk on the phone to them, only wrote letters back and forth. My parents came home to learn to know 3 married children and their mates and 11 grandchildren. Then they left for Tahiti and Taiwan. Still, they did not have a home, but now we had our own homes. All 4 of us were married over 50 years to our Christian mates. 2 oldest inmates are now in heaven. Brother Horton and I, as he said, are celebrated our 68th wedding anniversary, and we have 7 children with their mates, 28 grandchildren, and 35 great-grands, with 36 on almost to be born. So that makes over 80 with our family. So that's what I wrote my Chinese deliverer thank you for. I am and was always proud of my parents and their dedication to the Lord. My parents prayed specifically when we were prisoners that we would not become bitter. And we did not become bitter. We became realistic, but not bitter. And we are very grateful for that. When my younger brother and I were at the mission station, before we were left there, we would stand at the church door and speak in Chinese as the Chinese would come in and say, and we would say, hurry up and believe in Jesus. And that is still our heart cry today. Hurry up and believe in Jesus. Adding now, and serve Jesus with your whole heart. He is worth it all. My father quoted, when my life is past, how glad I shall be that the lamp of my life has been shining for thee. I shall then not regret what I gave of labor or money for sinners to save. I shall not mind that the way has been rough, that my Savior led me. That will be enough. When I am dying, how glad I shall be that the lamp of my life has been shining for thee. Will you be able to say that when your life is ended? Thank you.